I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Indie Football Podcast. I'm your host Luke Brown, and joining me in the studio this week we have Chief Football Writer Miguel Delaney, columnist Tony Evans and Sports Editor Ben Burrows. This week we're going to be talking about the Independent Century, which is a series we are running all this week on the website about the best 100 players of the last two decades. We asked 10 of our football writers to identify their 50 greatest players before then working out an overall list of 100. We started announcing 20 players per day on Monday, and we're going to spend this episode talking about a few of them. So first, Miguel, do you want to start by maybe explaining why we're doing this and also running through a few of the kind of challenges behind a list like this?
Basically, it's coming to the end of the decade and we wanted to get in ahead of everyone else.
Spoiler.
But yeah, I don't think it's appropriate time to reflect. And I think it's actually all the more fitting because we're probably coming to the close of the Messi-Ronaldo era. Already, like, we've seen a lot of commentary on that it's time to get used to the idea that they won't be around anymore. And I think they do change, I suppose, how you kind of perceive football and achievement and application of talent, because they've basically just set standards in terms of goals, trophies and records that we haven't really seen. Like, it's unprecedented. And, like, I was thinking about this when I was trying to pick my own list. Trying to judge a player like Zidane or even the Brazilian Ronaldo against their numbers is just almost a completely different set of parameters. But I think what's also relevant to that is I don't think that's completely down to their talent, brilliant as they are, but one better than the other. I think it's also because they kind of personify another era that they've benefited from, and which is basically the super club era. I mean, their rise coincided with, I think, the huge concentration of resources in basically a few super clubs, which has completely distorted the game. And then in contrast to Maradona's era, the 90s, even when Zidane was playing or the Brazilian Ronaldo was playing, it's meant that Messi and Ronaldo have basically played in these super squads where they should, just by logic, win the vast majority of their games because there's such a gap between them and most of their opposition. And I think that does make it difficult to kind of judge this and pull out some of the strands.
I mean, that's a good introduction. So basically, we're just going to be plugging pieces as we go. So Miguel wrote a piece on Monday which kind of introduced the whole concept, runs through a few of those kind of difficulties, the super club era, things like that. If we start by maybe talking about current players that are in the list. So our Northern football correspondent, Mark Critchley, he wrote a piece today about Kevin De Bruyne and why he deserves his place at number 57. And the whole piece is essentially him arguing why he's not guilty of recency bias, really. Ben, do you want to kind of talk about the difficulty of maybe judging current players in a list like this?
I mean, it's very tricky, isn't it? Because you almost need like that sort of totality of a career to sort of entirely judge it against someone else. So like, how could you possibly compare Virgil van Dijk's achievements, who's on this list, to someone like an Alessandro Nesta who won everything he needed to win? I mean, there's no reason to say that van Dijk can't do similar later on, but you can't rate him on what might be. You can only rate him on what's happened already. In Critch's piece, which is excellent, I think I advise everyone to read it, he basically says that De Bruyne is a phenomenal player, but if you sort of stack him up in terms of trophies and sort of achievements so far, like a DFB Pokal at Bremen and in the Bundesliga even, and an FA Cup and a couple of Premier Leagues, it doesn't really stack up against some of the best ones. But if you actually look at his ability at playing football, he's unbelievable, and he describes him as a magician playing 4G chess. It's quite interesting in his case that, given the surrounding with City and what could be on the horizon, this next couple of years are going to be very, very key to his sort of legacy in many ways. That as Critch points out, if they are banned from the Champions League next season, this might be the sort of his last chance to sort of cement that real chance. He's going to be 30 next season. So De Bruyne is quite an interesting one. Because in pure footballing ability, he's the best player in the Premier League, has been for 2.5 years, one of the best in Europe. Yet he's, I don't know where he's, about 50 on our list. Because how much higher can he be after not winning as much?
I think De Bruyne actually reflects maybe some of the difficulty in judging this, in that apart from that recency element, but also in terms of he's basically at one of these super clubs, City, probably the super club given their ownership and the amount of money that's been pumped into the club over the past few years, where it does feel like, and especially under Guardiola, they have so many brilliant attacking players that most of them are actually a bit replaced. It's quite a weird thing that they're all so brilliant, but it means that if two or three drop out, it's actually not, it doesn't affect the team that much, which kind of brings up all these questions. Like basically, I was thinking about this when I did the piece on Tuesday, whether, say, Diego Godin's title at Atletico Madrid and his influence on that is more important or more valuable than any title most City players win. But I think De Bruyne does stand apart from that, in that he's the most, I think he's probably the most irreplaceable player on that team.
Yeah, I think so. It is, because as you say, in the age of the super club, with rotating squads, hard to judge, really is. And it's, you know, you look, he's blossomed late in his career by comparison with the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, who were pretty young, you know, because he had the false start at Chelsea, certainly in the Premier League. And, you know, so he's what, 28 now? So he's coming towards, he should be at his peak, but soon, for a player like him with the pace he's got and the injuries he's got, you wonder whether he'll go over the top. And as you say, there are storm clouds on the horizon for City. And so you wonder, how will he kick on? How he'll kick on? Will he become a dominant player? And it does skew it by the comparison, as Miguel said, to Messi and Ronaldo, because, you know, everything you're judging in the past decade is through them. And it's one of the things that interested me about the list, really, is that it's a list that straddles the change, the game, the fundamental change in the game. I mean, even the 90s, when the pace of development was beginning to speed up, there was still enough contact with the old ways to, you know, so you could judge people in relation to them. And then all of a sudden, there was a sort of huge break. You know, we've been through the watershed in the game, really, and we're on the other side of it now. But there's a load of players in this, you know, like Figo, and Ben, you mentioned Shearer. You know, it's I put Tony Adams in, but you know, he was one of the, you know, a defender who ranks up there with Van Dijk. But well, you know, it's almost a man of another age. So I think that's one of the fascinating things about it. And you know, that means some of the choices will, to a lot of people, look a bit strange.
Well, when I was looking through some of the lists that we put forward, I've never seen such wild swing. Like, compared to the Premier League list, which is a lot more fixed, I felt, this had like some insane swings.
We should say, shouldn't we, really, that we were deliberately quite vague in what we were asking people for.
Yeah.
So we asked people for each individual journalist who took part, we asked for their 50 greatest footballers of the last 20 years, and that was pretty much it. We weren't asking, you know, which of the players who have won the most trophies, or who were the players most important to their teams. It was left vague, and I think that's why you've got such contrasting lists.
And I mean, just on my list, I must have sending the original list at least 4 or 5 corrections, and the person I wanted to write about, I didn't include in my list originally. So it's like, oh, you know, and say, oh, I've got to pop them in the top 20 now. You know, it's,
I looked at my own 3 days later and thought, what is this bollocks?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Well, if we stick with the kind of current players theme, looking down the list, there's a lot of young players now. Mbappe does very well. Harry Kane sneaks in there. People like that. Which players do you guys think are the guys most likely to kind of shoot up this list in, say, 5 years' time?
Mbappe, isn't it?
Even though he's already so high?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Mbappe is the obvious choice, I would think, given he's sort of, he is a key member of one of the biggest super clubs there is now in terms of financial backing and sort of how he's already set to win. I mean, he's guaranteed to win three trophies a season from when he starts. So, and he's also playing for a nation who have got a production line of talent and have shown that over the last decade. Whether he sort of goes the way of we've talked about before, it's quite interesting with sort of a player like Mbappe, whose entire game is based off that like explosion, that sort of real speed element. Whether he goes the way of like a Michael Owen, who started the same way, but as you get older, you have to adapt your game differently. So perhaps what makes Mbappe great won't make him so good in, say, 5, 6, 7 years' time.
Yeah. Well, Owen's one of the Millennium's Ballon d'Or winners, and he's not on this. Is he the only one, actually?
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, and he's an object lesson, after the first time his hamstring went, he was never the same player. And he talks about it. He's actually really, really interested on the subject. You know, that awareness that the next sprint you do, it might be the end. And, you know, so you wonder, with someone like Mbappe, if that happens to him, how it'll go. I mean, I think there's, you know, I'll probably go against popular opinion here, but I think there's a fair chance that Harry Kane will go up the list if he, you know, continues playing. He's, you know, he is, by comparison with some of these people on the list, a bit workman-like. You know, it's and he probably, let's be honest about it, he needs to leave Tottenham and win things, you know, because it's not going to happen there, is it?
Kane's an interesting one, because he's probably the only player I can see on there who could feasibly move up loads or drop out altogether.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just said it off there, and it's actually worth repeating on air, but we had this discussion at the weekend over when we were away with England that Kane is someone, he's followed that Ronaldo path of trying to be the ultimate professional, you know, marginal gains all over the place, shaving everything off, how he works so that he's the ultimate pro, and all to win absolutely nothing. Because I suppose he couldn't make the most biggest marginal gain of all, which you could argue is to leave Spurs. But that, I mean, there is a bit of a contradiction there.
I find the snobbishness around Kane so strange, though. I mean, you know, using that logic, if he's playing in a team that aren't quite as good as the teams winning trophies, and if he's playing in the England international team, and if he's still winning Premier League Golden Boots and top scoring at the World Cup, isn't that to his credit?
Well, what are you in the game for, though? I mean, because he's clearly not in it to just play, he's in it to achieve.
But we're judging this on personal standards, you know, well, it's not a team achievement.
Well, I think what you can judge it on, I mean, we've said the age of the super club. So if you're playing for a super club, you're going to score a lot of goals. But, you know, I mean, he's not playing for one of the cannon fodder teams. He's playing for one of the sides that aspires to getting into, if not the Real Madrid and Barcelona level, but certainly the elite level, the top level. And so he should be in a team that is aspiring to winning things and a team that's good enough to set up a lot of goals. I mean, if he was scoring these goals for Norwich, I'd buy the argument. Tottenham are going to, or should be, Tottenham are going to roll over the likes of Newcastle. That worked out. But so they should be doing that. And you know, so as good as he is, there is, you know, I think to go to the next level, he needs to move to a club that plays at the next level.
Okay, let's stick on the topic of British players. So we're not going to give away the final position of anybody, or we're going to try not to, but Ben and Miguel, you disagree over the best British player. Migs, should we start with you? Who's your top? I think it's Gerrard.
Did I have Gerrard?
Defend it now.
Can I see what I sent in? I thought I would have had Lampard. Gerrard was a more talented player, but it was that classic case of kind of Lampard made himself more effective, maybe. Maybe it was just he was in a richer club in that sense.
Well, yeah. I think he was more reliable in the sense you knew what you're getting. You get 20 goals from midfield from a year, and you know, sometimes even taking out the penalties, and that's an exceptional haul. And so and he was more disciplined than Stephen. You know,
I actually had Gerrard ahead of Lampard by one.
Yeah, you know, he was more disciplined.
So
I mean, in many ways, you know, if I was picking a team, and obviously my biases towards Gerrard, but if I was picking a team, I'd think long and hard about putting Lampard in first, because I'd know where I was getting from him.
Yeah,
and you know, it's and he's not gonna go charging up the pitch and disappear. You know, it's he's gonna fill the position that he plays in.
I mean, so it was always quite interesting that it was one of Gerrard or likely Scholes who was the ones who were shifted rather than Lampard. So I think a lot of his managers saw that Lampard was key in that centre midfield because you still need to keep him there. Now, perhaps that's to do with sort of.
Now tell me Scholes isn't on the list.
Are we going to go into Scholes?
Tell me Scholes isn't on the list. He can't be on the list.
I don't think he is he?
Yeah, Paul Scholes is.
I know he's on the list. I'm just trying to wind everyone up because this is the most overrated player who ever kicked a ball in the history of time. You know what? We all these quotes saying, the best player ever played against. He was never even the best player in any team he played in. Not one single team. Not one, probably not one single game. And, you know, it's like this myth of Paul Scholes, you know, he's the best passer. Why did managers like Ferguson never play him in the position that everyone thinks he should have played? You know, Ferguson even played him in the half and half position behind Van Nistelrooy. He didn't know what to do with him because he wasn't that good.
Ferguson only figured that out as well. If he was that good a midfielder, as was often said, why did Ferguson only put him there in his late 30s?
Yeah.
And if you actually do look at for Scholes' prime years, which should have been his prime years, which would have been 2003, and he did have a good 2002-03 season by Van Nistelrooy, to 2006-07. He actually kind of went missing for a bit. Now, these were fallow years for United, but maybe that says something in itself. There is a... I, every time I think of Scholes, basically, I think of this tweet by an account, Burnage Daydream, called Gaz. And it was when Kauto Starr died, and it's a piss take of all those kind of made-up quotes from foreign footballers about Scholes, which is just... My toughest opponent, Scholes of Manchester, by Kauto Starr. The horse.
Scholes, brilliant. Scholes is two places above Roy Keane, Miguel. What do you make of that?
That's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous. You know what? I would shoot everyone who's involved in compiling the list, including myself.
But I mean, I'm not gonna say nationality bias. I mean more familiarity bias. But if you look at that millennium alone, I think Keane was responsible for one of the most impressive individual feats in that he absolutely dragged Ireland to the 2002 World Cup. So that's dragging a small nation to like quite a high level in a way that kind of, like a lot of these players don't really play for countries that small, obviously to go with his Manchester. But I don't think Scholes ever applied that sort of individual influence on any team ever.
No, didn't dominate games.
I would argue that the best English slash British slash Irish player is actually someone we've not mentioned at all yet, which is Ashley Cole. I'd say that he was the only one of any of these players who was truly world class for his entire career.
And that's the man I forgot about and wanted to write about, because that's exactly what I wanted to write.
He's the dominant left back of his era, both in the Premier League and in Europe. Won several Premier League titles, won 7 FA Cups more than anybody else, and overall was. Yeah, he was the object lesson. He was the standard. He set the standard for everybody else at that position. It for as good as and as great as Scholes, allegedly, Gerrard and Lampard were. They were never that. Lampard was third on the Ballon d'Or list, which is very impressive. Which Stephen never did, but Ashley Cole was for me anyway certainly the best.
And not only that, he was part of that Arsenal's invincible team where their main point of attack was down the left. You know, in Pires and Henri was a fantastic flank. You know, they just caused all manner of problems. And he was a crucial part of that. And the so-called golden generation, he was the only one who was consistently top class. And as Ben says, consistently would have made a world 11.
Okay, I'm getting angry looks from Tom, the producer. So we're going to go for a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be talking about some of the players who have been unlucky to miss out. We're going to tackle the Messi versus Ronaldo debate, and we're also going to continue discussing why this list is ultimately a load of rubbish.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. This week is the Independent Century Special, which is our list of the 100 greatest footballers of the last two decades. And we're going to start this part of the podcast by talking about why it is rubbish. So, Miguel, looking down the list, which player do you think has been the most underrated?
Most underrated? David Villa, maybe? 33? The fact that Raul is ahead of him is a joke. people have voted that. he basically ousted Raul from the Spanish national team, immediately became top scorer in two successive tournaments, and Spain actually started winning things when they made that change. There's obviously bigger reasons for that, but still. For a team that just passed and passed and passed, he offered cutting edge. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the last few decades, to be honest.
We should probably plug your Barca Inter long read, because obviously so much of that is about Zlatan and the problems Pep had kind of cramming him into that Barcelona team, and the problems that caused, and then obviously they go out, get Villa, and
it was after the second leg basically where Guardiola realised he looks at Abramovich, and I think as they said, that was basically the moment that Abramovich was done. Ibrahimovic, should I say. Guardiola decided to get rid, and they did what they should have done in the summer of 2009 when they got rid of Eto'o. Although there's a question over whether they should have got rid of Eto'o at all. But they got in Villa, who just so suited that Barca. And he was brilliant that season as well. He scored the key third goal in the Champions League final, curled it into the top corner. And it was only just that he got injured the next season that he probably was denied maybe Barca another Champions League and Spain. Spain won the Euro 2012, having to adapt without him, but I think he obviously would have made them even better.
We touched on this earlier in the podcast, Mark Critchley's article about kind of...
Totti!
Totti's 31.
That is nonsense.
I'm not sure how that happened. I think he was kind of in the middle of every single person's list.
You know what Totti is, though? It's a little bit like Pirlo, but Pirlo's a much better player in that...
Where is Pirlo?
11. To be fair, like he's centre of a Champions League team, centre of a World Cup team. But Totti though, like it's a little like Pirlo because of how he looks and because of a certain way of in terms of his style, and all because of the kind of the whole Italian sheen thing. It's a bit of a shorthand for people who don't really know much about football. It's like, ooh, he's good. Like, he's class.
He's got nice hair. The inverted number 10.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
Totti, another example of sort of one of those guys who straddles the sort of end, the start point of our list as well. A lot of what he did very well in Serie A came before the millennium, and obviously he won a World Cup afterwards. But
he wasn't essential to that 2006.
He wasn't essential to that. What I would say in terms of someone who's underrated, I would go for Aguero. I think if we said earlier that De Bruyne is the one irreplaceable player, I would perhaps argue that it's Aguero. You've seen the difference he makes when he plays. A guy who gets you 20 goals a season. You could argue, as we have, that he should be doing this well because he's playing for a super team. But he will go down as one of the greatest, certainly one of the greatest players in City history and one of the best players in Premier League history. Scored the most famous goal in Premier League history. He's sort of, if you look on this list, he's in at 60. He sort of is around about the point where you end from being very good in one league to being a winner on a Champions League stage and then a winner at international level. He's sort of everyone after him. Guys who've won World Cups.
Yeah, I don't understand why he's so much higher than Harry Kane, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's done it regularly over the years.
Well, Kane's outscored him two Premier League seasons. Kane's done it at international level, which Aguero's never really done.
Yeah, well, he can produce trophies, though, and medals. So, I mean, that's a good start.
what did I actually interrupt you with there?
What were we talking about? I was going to ask, actually. So, Critch wrote his article about modern players. And the criticism you always get on Twitter or Facebook or whatever with kind of features like this is people accusing you of recency bias. Mm. So I wanted to ask, which player on this list do you think is kind of in there, you know, and maybe shouldn't be? I would look towards Van Dijk, to be perfectly honest, who's in 83.
Mm. Yeah, I think, yeah. I mean, or Salah above, you know, Van Dijk. You know, it's. I think you can make that argument for any player who's still playing. But for me, the biggest scandal in the list, the crime of the century, is Zidane is below Xavi. Now, Xavi is a great player. The best nuts and bolts player I've probably ever seen. But Zinedine Zidane, and I know he straddled the millennium, but come on! And, you know, you can make an argument for Messi and Cristiano being above him, but Zidane, he's the player who's probably the great player who's most underrated.
Do you reckon? Yeah. I actually think he's overrated.
No,
I think if he went missing, so he basically,
I've
I think
been waiting for this.
He had so many huge moments, but lots of kind of gaps in between.
It's like what you play for, the huge moments. He dragged teams to World Cups, to winning World Cups,
but that's the
Champions
thing.
Leagues.
He beyond that, and he started in that Galactico team in 2002. It was Madrid's centenary year, and their big thing was basically we're going to win the treble, and they kind of spawned a Champions League against Leverkusen, granted with a brilliant goal. But after that, that Madrid team, he spent what, 4 years at Madrid. 2001 to 2006, he won two trophies, a Champions League and a league. That is for and they
didn't he win the one against Valencia as well?
He won Champions League in 2000. He went in 2001, won Champions League 2002, won League 03. Then they did nothing for 3 years in the Galactic career. That's 5 years at Madrid. 3 years when he's kind of just floating.
Well, I mean, are we going to forget, like, you know, the World Cup, like the European Championships?
Well, that's 98, though, so it didn't happen,
well,
according to Alice.
2006, when he had his, he suddenly, in the last group game, well, it was the last 16, where he suddenly turbo-powered, having been doing nothing for the first three matches.
He was amazing in the final, apart from the moment where he headbutted somebody in the chest.
Well, I mean, shouldn't button someone on the pitch elevate you at least three or four places?
The one thing I would say as well, he probably actually, maybe other than Cannavaro in 2006 in a different way, he's the only player that has actually completely dominated a tournament in the historic kind of Maradona way, and he did that in Euro 2000.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you could, you know, parachute Xavi into... No, that team, I know they're different sorts of players, but into that midfield instead of Zidane, and they don't win it. You know, it's Xavi and Zidane would have worked perfectly together. That would have been just brilliant. But like, I just think the outrageous talent. I suppose the only other player I'd say is probably overrated. One of the greats is Beckenbauer, but he's out of this timeline. But I honestly, I hear all the time that Zidane disappeared. And look, thinking back, I don't remember him disappearing, but maybe I wasn't paying attention.
What about Brazilian Ronaldo? While we're on this kind of theme of players who are, you know, very good at the end of the 90s and then kind of coming into the new millennium, he won't give his exact position away, but he's comfortably inside the top 10. Is that generous?
No.
8 goals in the World Cup to win it. It's all right.
Yeah, I mean, he was outrageous. And again, he straddled the millennium. So, you know, and some of his most exciting football was played before. But he was just, he was a phenomenon. You know, it's just unbelievable. And he did get old very, very quickly. But, I mean, he had enough of a golden period in this millennium to definitely put him in the top 10.
I mean, he's one of those guys, as you get to the sharp end of any list, that they sort of, all these things, all these diverse sort of threads we've been talking about all combine with 5, 6, 7, 8 players where they were generational talents and they also won everything. So Ronaldo was, I mean, he was a video game player, potentially his peak was slightly before.
Yeah,
but I mean, he's still, yeah, like Mick said, 8 goals in a World Cup to win it is pretty good.
Mick is about to explode.
Griezmann at 67. What? Who's gone for that? He better not be on my list.
That was Dermot. I think we can name drop. That was Dermot Corrigan had Griezmann incredibly high.
Ah, come on. Yeah, Griezmann is not on my list. Deco is, though. I'm not sure about that.
I don't think Griezmann was on my list either. It's I mean, he's a good player. He's and probably over the length of his career, once he's retired, he might well sneak in.
Yeah.
You know, over a 20-year period, and probably sneaking into the 90s. He's a bit high already. I mean, you know, 67. I've just given that one away, but we've seen that earlier on in the week.
Yeah.
But then when you've got Schneider in there as well, above him, you think to yourself, well, you know, why not?
Okay, I think we've avoided it for long enough. So any debate about the best players of the last 20 years naturally has to touch on Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. Before we get into a discussion on who was the best, I think we all agree. Miguel, do you want to explain a bit more, you know, how these two have, yeah, changed football, essentially kind of ushered in that super club era, and how they've changed our perception of kind of individual greatness as well?
I think it's probably not just changed our perceptions, but I think what's instructive as well is that they're both essentially the two And it adds to the whole rivalry, two contrasting archetypes of players, and that one was just pure natural talent. The other obviously had an awful amount of natural talent, but yet what really took him up to close to the level of the other one was, you know, this very, very 21st century ultra-professional hard work, marginal gains, like everything involved. You know, he really, you know, there wasn't an inch of his career left unexplored to try and make him a better player. So, yeah, in that sense, because even if you remember, like, they probably, Ronaldo came through in 2003 when he had that friendly against United, and I think they had already been scouting him, but that was basically the day Ferguson just went, okay, let's go for it. And yet he's still kind of, he didn't really have proper, he seemed a very, very flighty player until the 06-07 season, and that was his first proper goal season. And even then, he actually tailed off a lot after Christmas. Whereas Messi, he made his debut around 2005, and already you could see straight away, this is the future. This is, and that kind of, that stayed very, very constant, bar injuries he had, which were only really solved. And I think it's something forgotten about Messi, probably, that I think for the first 3 years of his career, he had a long-term injury, like 3 months. Every season, and that only stopped when Guardiola took over at City, and, you know, it helped with his hamstring injuries. But then, so I suppose it was around 07-08, Ronaldo maybe a year before, where they just basically started to produce these figures. And at first it was kind of, you know, top level Shearer, Hugo Sanchez stuff, you know, mid-30s scoring every season, and then it just stayed at that level and went beyond from basically 08, and it just became to a level and a consistency we've ever seen. And I think that's the thing, in contrast to Zidane in that way, where we're talking about Zidane in great moments, it does feel with Messi and Ronaldo that it's not so much great moments, it's that actually some of their moments almost get underplayed because we see so much of them. I mean, if you see some of the stuff Messi produces every week, that if that was any other player, you'd be talking, like, this would be career-defining stuff. But with him, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. I think everyone here agrees that Messi is above Ronaldo, so it's probably more interesting to ask, do you guys think that this is now a closed debate, or are there valid arguments for Cristiano actually being the better player?
I think the way I'd look at it, over a season, Messi, I'd take Messi all the time. For a single game, I'd take Ronaldo. So it's not cut and dried as Messi is, you know, so far ahead of him, because obviously over a season, Ronaldo's going to cause havoc as well. But, you know, come at the moment, Cristiano Ronaldo is the man you turn to. And sometimes Messi, by his standards, has, I mean, we're being harsh, both on Zidane, and I'm going to use the same phrase, gone missing. And that's very, very harsh, because he doesn't quite go missing. But sometimes he hasn't imposed himself on big games as much as he does throughout the season. And Ronaldo invariably does.
But isn't there a different thing there? And it comes down to how they play, that whereas Messi is basically just a pure player, and that he's always going to be involved in playing, pushing play to make it happen. Whereas Ronaldo is someone, ultimately, because of his physique, that no matter how he's played in the match, you send the ball to him in the 6-yard box, he heads it in. That's his moment.
Well, I think the big contrast between them is vanity and humility, and it's both on and off the pitch. You know, it's you know, Cristiano, it's all about him. I mean, you know, it really is. Whereas Messi, if Messi thinks a 5-yard ball to the left back will be better for the team, he'll give it. You know, Maradona was the same.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Cristiano will do, like, he'll backheel it through the marker's legs and turn and go. And if it doesn't work, he'll blame the left back.
I mean, I'm a Messi guy. I would always say that football is more about, for me anyway, it's all a personal preference. But for me, it's about how it makes you feel. So it's what Messi can do and what he on a field, the way he can play, the way he sort of, that unique, like, just the ball under his spell makes you feel things that Ronaldo doesn't. Ronaldo's relentless. Ronaldo's a machine, but he doesn't make you feel sort of that magic, that sort of thing that when you were a kid, you watched a player do something, it was incredible. That's what it is for me. I think in terms of the question we asked, I mean, Ronaldo's making a relentless case. Like, it's his post 30 run is like something we've never seen. Like we said, Messi has been a pretty sort of consistent level that he's got to, and he's continued. Ronaldo post Manchester United at Real Madrid and since is just remarkable. Like, you cannot rule him out of any game. Like, I mean, last season's a great example. Atletico had that game done after one leg. And then Ronaldo, through almost, it felt like, on that night, through force of will, willed his team through to the next round.
This brings us perfectly onto the last question, really, because I wanted to ask, can your opinion on this change? Like, say Ronaldo drags Juventus to a Champions League title, which obviously that club is desperate for, and say he then inspires Portugal to defend their European Championship title, could that switch the debate?
I don't think so. I think Messi is just too good. I think he's a phenomenal talent, and for all Cristiano's ability, I don't think that would change things. I think if you look at the careers and the rounds, Messi has won enough that we can't say, you know, yeah. I mean, you can't say he hasn't won, you know, an international tournament, but I don't think that demeans him significantly in this argument, and I don't think it elevates Ronaldo higher enough to make, you know, to make him better overall.
I think, I mean, like I said, it's more about, for me, sort of purely in terms of who's the most talented footballer. I think regardless of how many trophies you win or how many goals you score or the records you break, if you look at those two footballers together, then there's only one who's the best.
Okay, cool. Thank you, guys. Sadly, that's all we've got time for this week. Be sure to follow Indie Football on social media to keep up to date with everything going on. And if you're a new listener, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.